Welcome to the Creative Condition Podcast, an ongoing series of conversations and considerations to help people understand and embrace their own unique creativity for fulfilling lives and brilliant careers. My name is Ben Tallon. I'm an illustrator and author, and I bring 16 years of creative industry experience working with the New York Times, The Guardian, the Premier League, and more. And I invite designers, artists, psychologists, scientists, coaches, athletes, sensitivity experts, and all kinds of thought leaders to help us broaden our knowledge of creativity. Creativity is a fundamental pillar of human happiness, a vital ingredient in the solutions to our problems, but so often misunderstood. The show is supported by founding sponsor and B Corp, Illustration X. Take a look at their stunning range of illustrators and animators at illustrationx.com. If you like the music for the show, it's by Dirty Freud, who you can listen to now on Spotify and all good music streaming services.
The reality is, from my experience working in social media from the beginning, all you need are fundamentals. Like, that's literally it, because social media is simple. It's not easy, but it is simple, and this is why we've got 15-year-old millionaires.
Today I'm joined by Andrew Miles Davis. Andrew is a digital and social media consultant. I think it's safe to say he's an expert. He's been there since the beginning of internet time with MySpace, the BBC. He's seen disasters. He's seen things crash and burn, and he can tell us why. He can also speak about algorithms, how we can get our stuff seen, how can we remain authentic, tell stories that are true to us while ticking the tech boxes to please the bots. Andrew is joined by a 41-year-old floundering man who has lost his way and his enthusiasm with social media. So I wanted to get my own ass kicked and hope that it would help you guys at the same time. This is The Creative Condition. How are you doing, guys? I hope you're well. How is your week going? This is The Creative Condition. We are back with episode 234. And embarrassingly, this conversation is taking place 8 years after Andrew Miles Davis and I had it in London. It's a bit of an anomaly in the sense that it's the only episode I can think of that I had, and for no good reason, never released. So I was slightly tail between my legs when I went back to Andrew. I saw him doing the rounds on social, doing his thing very, very well, as that is what he does, being a man who trains businesses and individuals in social media and digital marketing and media. He's a wonderful guy. We had a great chat. There was no good reason not to release that episode. Alas, it slipped through the cracks. I was embarrassed. I went back. Thankfully, Andrew was very, very cool about it and said, you know what? I'd be happy for you to release it, but I do feel it's a little dated. 8 years have passed, and in this digital landscape, 8 years is a friggin' age. So let's have it again. And I was delighted he was up for chatting again, because I kind of wanted to do that, but I didn't ask him again. You know, when someone's giving you their time and you've not put it out there, you kind of think, is he going to hate me for this? But it wasn't the case, and he's a lovely fella, and here we are today. And what a time to be releasing this. I mean, for any regular listeners to the show, you'll have heard me going through the motions recently with AI and everything, and there's not a day goes by when I don't have strong feelings about it one way or another, and on the bad days, I freak out. It's a revolution we're in right now, and is it coming from my job? Is it already here? It's been bumpy these last couple of years, and I know I'm far from alone in that sentiment. And when you look around at the sheer power of the technology, the videos it's producing, the adverts people are mocking up, it's hard not to feel like it's at least going to shrink the whirlpool, so the work pool, I should say. So head back in the last few episodes, I did the AI artists audit when I first kind of freaked out about all the generative AI content. Since then, I've revisited the topic. Last week's episode was a human story about creativity, you know, looking at the good stuff about collaboration and relationships and why it's still going to be needed regardless of the technology, which I stand by. However, when things are evolving on a daily basis and it's doing so scarily well, and we're living in a capitalist society with, you know, jaded economies, then there's concern. So I thought it was good timing to bring Andrew in and talk to him about self-promotion, about social media, about digital marketing and AI. Because Andrew recently has been the co-founder of a fantastic little podcast, which we're going to talk about at the end of the show, called In a Nutshell. And it's in a, with a little I in brackets, AI nutshell. And it's a 10-minute daily show where they jump into generative AI with a certain topic each day. It's a great little listen. It's become a little regular for me now since I used it as part of my research for this show, but then got hooked at the same time. And the lovely thing about snappy little 10-minute episodes, which is kind of the opposite as to what I do on this show, despite the highlights edits now that I put out, is that you can just bang it on with your morning coffee and it's not going to intrude upon your schedule too much, and you pick up a little wisdom from people who are very respected in their fields. So recommend that one. Go and check that out on the usual platforms. Thank you for coming back. If you're a regular, the numbers have been gradually improving recently, especially since I've started doing the highlights and the kind of what we learned responsive episodes, and I'm a little bit more up on the marketing. I'm going to be taking some of Andrew's tips from today and putting them into effect. So thank you for that. Please do give us a little review and a subscription or a rating, depending what platform you're listening on. It really, really helps. Hopefully going to have the live episode coming up soon that I did with Max Ottignon, founder of Ragged Edge Branding and Design Studio. We did that live at DNAD New Blood 2024 Festival. It was a lot of fun getting into the flattening of culture through algorithms and how there's also a massive opportunity for genuine creativity just now. So big thank you to the sponsors of the show, founders with me here since day one, IllustrationX.com, represented me now for over a decade. They're a great agency doing great work in the industry, representing many global illustrators, animators, artists. They do the lot. Check them out, IllustrationX.com, and also their TrendX report, which is the kind of frontline feedback from their team of agents, particularly relevant for you illustrators and art directors out there. Also, a big thank you to the Ukrainian Institute, who I chose to support on this show because they're going through such hardship in war at the moment, but they're doing some incredible work to support the Ukrainian creative community. So go and check them out at ui.org.ua. And if you're in a position to share the Ukrainian creative community's work, please do so. It's hard to express just how meaningful that is. And if you want a real reflection on that, then I suggest you skip back a little while and listen to my very candid conversation with Olya Protasova, who is a Ukrainian designer, illustrator, and design community activist. It was one of the most powerful, moving episodes I've ever done, and probably one of the most moving conversations I'll ever have, quite frankly. Truly powerful stuff. That's episode 212, followed by creative stories number 4, The Hockney Soldier, which is a short story I wrote to respond to some of the emotions I felt from that relationship with Olya and the report that I got about a Ukrainian designer or artist, we weren't sure, who sold his entire career's design and art books collection to a local secondhand bookstore to go and fight in a war. Incredibly touching stuff. The only way I could respond was through creativity, so I wrote a story called The Hockney Soldier about what that meant and how that broke through the veneer of detachment. You know, the way we see things on the TV news, and we our brain kind of protects us by telling us it's in a faraway land, and isn't that tragic, but I'm going to get on with my day now. And it just smashed right through that. So go back and listen to those episodes. What's been going on? What's been going on with you guys? Let me know. The feedback's been a little quiet recently. I've had some new listeners giving me feedback on episodes. And I know that as a podcast listener, I don't always communicate with the shows I listen to. So that's fine. But do come and say hello, because I sit alone in this glorified shed most of the week. And I love hearing from you guys. I love your feedback on the show. Let me know what you think about recent highlights episodes and the kind of what I learned angle. I had somebody commenting recently on my first book, Champagne and Wax Crayons, about at the end of each chapter, I kind of distilled the memoir into a what I learned series of tips that works for anyone, you know. The whole story was written biographically, but in a way that nobody knew who I was, which was very much the case. But they would relate to the topics being spoken about because they were commonly experienced issues for people looking to make a career from creativity. And somebody fed back earlier in the week about how much they enjoyed that aspect of the book, because it gave them a little breather at the end of it and something to take away, almost in a school note style. I've also had people getting in touch about the creative coaching, which I am working hard to build the framework. I've got some free pilot sessions coming up in the summer, which I've got booked in for feedback and testimonials to check that I can do what I think I might be quite good at after 10 years of doing this podcast, of writing about and studying and observing creativity. Truly become my passion, and I'm looking to go into business alongside my illustration work, helping people one-to-one as a coach, but also businesses through a workshop and talk format, and then a bit of an MOT, if you're here in the UK, if not an audit style one-off session, maybe 3 or 4 hours, where we go through all of the framework and the kind of skeleton of creativity with you, about your circumstances, about your hopes and dreams and fears and experiences and current situation, so that we can identify blind spots or failings or opportunities, you know, and really give you some direction. And then at the end of it, recommended notes, a report, almost an end of term style report, so you can go away and focus on areas you need to work on to really get yourself into your optimal creativity zone. So very excited about that. Get in touch if you're interested. I'm going to be keeping a kind of statement of interest series of notes, and I will be opening up some early lower priced slots for my first clients when I get into that. It's probably going to be in the autumn before I'm ready. But watch this space and listen to this show to find out more. The book is out now, The Creative Condition, 10 years of research, 2.5 years of writing. Get your signed paperbacks at bentallenwriter.com/shop or grab your ebook on Kindle. That's about it, rambling from me. Get in touch if you want. Hello at bentallen.com. I'm prominent mostly on LinkedIn these days, also Instagram. And without further ado, Andrew Miles Davis, a digital and social media consultant. You can check out Andrew's work at andrewmilesdavis.com. Listen to his podcast, In a Nutshell. It's out there on all the good channels now. Enjoy this patter.
I've been working in digital pretty much all my career. So when I graduated university back in 2000, for the first, I would say, few months, I kind of didn't know what to do. You kind of get into that stage of, hey, I've been... let's apply for all the jobs, and then they say you need 2 years experience, and then you'll be like, but I've been studying. So kind of was stuck for about 8-9 months, and then I was on the internet, and this was when it was dial-up, when you had to go through your phone, and there was a job available to moderate chat rooms for a BBC site called, I think it was called H2G2. This is I don't know if anyone remembers this listening to that, but it was years and years ago. So I applied for the job and I didn't get it, because when it comes to current affairs, that I didn't know more than like the other people were applying. But they did say, because you was into, because I was very much into entertainment, sports, pop culture, etc., they had a they just got a client, which was Liverpool Football Club. So they said, would you be interested to working with us to essentially moderate Liverpool's chat rooms and forums? So this was in 2001. So I started working for Liverpool Football Club at first, moderating chat rooms and forums. I don't support Liverpool, by the way. You know, they paid well. I went with the money, if I'm being honest. But I went there. And yeah, it was really interesting. So you literally, you'll have, at the time, legends like Ian Rush would be, and you kind of host the Q&A with people. But you'd just be in chat rooms, just making sure you just kind of moderate it, so it's like a nice experience. So I've done it for Liverpool. And then they said, we've got this new show coming up called Pop Idol. So at the time, there was a show called Pop Stars, and that was very big. But Pop Idol was a new one, and there was this new judge called Simon Cowell, and he's going to be worse than all judges, etc. So I actually started working on that. So I'd done the whole season. Will Young won that one. It's Will Young, Gareth Gates, Darius. It was that one. So I was doing it for them. Then they got PlayStation, so I was moderating. I was moderating forums for PlayStation, and then I was moderating forums for a site called Friends Reunited. Some people may remember that site, but it was kind of Facebook before Facebook. So I was doing that for about a year, and then my parents said to me, get a proper job, because working on the internet or working from home at that time wasn't a proper job. So one day I was just literally just surfing the internet, and Radio 1 was about to launch a new sister station and a digital station called Network X, and I said, this is perfect for me, because it was all to do with like UK garage, which was big at the time, hip-hop, R&B music, drum and bass. So I was like, okay, this sounds perfect, because I always listen to their specialist shows in those genres. So I went to a few fairs and when they were having it around the country, and then when it was available, I applied. And luckily I got an interview. And when I spoke to them, they said, the reason you've got the interview is, even though you've got no radio experience, but it's online and digital radio, or DAB, D-A-B at the time, was going to be based a lot of it online. You were working with big companies at the time. So I ended up doing a few interviews with them and ended up being one of 16 to get the job. And I think like a few thousand people had applied. So I ended up working for Network X, which eventually became One Extra. So I was there at the beginning of them, of One Extra, helped launch it. And I was producing radio shows for about 4.5 years in this DAB digital world. So still within that digital online world. Had a brilliant time. But I was doing a show in San Francisco in 2006, and I was approached by a small startup that just been bought by Rupert Murdoch for about $600 million. And it was this new thing, and it was called social networking. And I took the biggest gamble of my career, and I decided to leave the comforts of the BBC to be part of the team to launch MySpace. So listeners, if you remember MySpace, so I was there at MySpace when Facebook was only available to students. That's kind of like how early I got in there. And I was part of the team to launch it in the UK. So the UK, which was the second, the US was the main market, UK, and then the rest of Europe was the markets after that. So I was working for MySpace from 2006 to 2009. So when I joined, there was about 20 million people on the site. And within a year and a half, we took it to over 250 million. And about a year later, we lost 250 million. So I kind of know what works and what doesn't. So when I left MySpace at the beginning of 2009, one of the things that actually happened to me, I ended up getting repetitive strain injury. So I have problems with the nerves in my hands. So because of that, and that was, I was going to leave. I had to leave. I couldn't work anymore. Because of that, I was kind of saying to myself, what shall I do? And then by chance, one of my friends said, do you want to come and speak to kids about what you're doing? Because when you was working at MySpace, I was working in entertainment. So under me was like music, fashion, films, TV, and music, fashion, films, TV, and something else, sport. So I was doing a lot of stuff there. And because I'd met a lot of celebrities and worked with a lot of famous people, he was like, can you come in and speak to my students at a school? And I said, can I do more than just speak in assembly? Can I come up with something? He said, like what? And then I went away and I built a course, and he loved the course. So did the headmistress. And then that course ended up me creating it was a 4-week course, and it was for 90% of their GCSE English coursework. And it was for kids that were on borderline CDs. So at the end of the course, we ended up getting C's, B's, and A's, pretty much all of the students. Well, not for pretty much, all of the students got C's, B's, and A's. So the school was extremely happy. I was actually on TV, featured on TV. I was in a few newspapers as well. And then a couple of friends said, hey, why don't you come and train here? And then that's when I started getting into the corporate world. So I trained at the IAB, so the Internet Advertising Bureau. So I was one of their trainers there. Then I started training a lot of the ad agencies like Saatchi & Saatchi, JWT, Leo Burnett, and then RIM as well. So RIM, their main thing was BlackBerry. And then from there, just kind of word got around. This guy, he's got, by now he had about 8-9 years experience working in digital. So this is 2010. He should train you. And then pretty much since then, I've been training. And I've been as busy today as I was 10 years ago. So yeah, that's pretty much, in a nutshell, my career.
Can I add a slight segue, but can I ask you, what was the crux of the elevation of the students' grades there? How did that success come about?
Sure. To be honest, a lot of it, when I spoke to the teacher, he goes, it was just, you made it relatable, which was the gift and the curse of it. He goes, you made it relatable. So for example, when English, you had persuasive writing, creative writing, presentation skills, and something else. I can't remember what it was, but because I knew those four things, I created it in the sense of, how would you be persuasive online? How would you be creative online? How would you present online? So we kind of done that, and we ended up doing, putting together a short little YouTube video, which is still on YouTube now. I think it's under the title Social Media Fundamentals. And that's pretty much how. So, and it was over 4 weeks. So when I'm rather than asking them to create, like, how would you be creative to, I don't know, whatever they do in English, it would be, imagine you're creating the pitch for an advertising agency for FIFA. How would you go about writing that? What do you think mm-hmm. needed to be included? So it was just still keeping the same principles, but making it relevant to them. But you're then using like a digital, like, because they were on MySpace at the time and they kind of knew about Facebook and stuff. So just kind of making it relevant to them. And then, yeah.
Yeah. So you're bringing, yeah. So you're bringing in passion points. You're being yeah. sympathetic to personalities. I hope that will be the answer, because I'm a big advocate for creativity within the way subjects are taught, no matter how banal. I think that if you can, just as I speak as somebody who really struggled to get motivated in any of my subjects at school, sure. even the yeah. subjects I've now go on to be successful in my career. So that includes art, design. Mm. I just, you know, there was something very banal and very formulaic about all of that. And it was yeah. only when I sort of found the dynamism of art college and that welcomed my personality and my story that I came alive and actually could apply myself. So, and ever since, I've seen that repeated among so many different students' experiences.
Yeah, exactly. To be honest, that's what, when it comes to a lot of education, and that's what I do now, I educate. I'm always trying to work out what are the challenges they face, what are some of the pain points, what are the wants, what do they need, what are the things to connect, and then I build content around that. The reason I say it was the curse, though, I say it's the gift and the curse, is because when I tried to get it into more schools, a lot of the teachers would push back and say, yeah, but it's your career. You can talk about this. We can't. You know, you can make it exciting because of what you've learned. You can have a picture with me and Dizzy Rascal or Jay-Z or Beyonce. They can't. So that was the kind of the gift, because it was very much bottlenecked on me. Like, you can still take the same principles. Like, I think they could have easily taken the same principles, but because of the way I delivered it, the way it was certainly the context behind it, they thought it was a bit too much of a stretch for them to do it. It needed me.
I get you, because I come, you know, like any of us, you come with decades worth of a lived experience and particular bits of knowledge, and that probably takes a long time to, not that you have to replicate that directly, but it would take a lot of groundwork for the, you know, I see that, but I do think it's transferable too. Anyway,
yeah, to be honest, I think it was transferable, but as I said, it's one thing a lot of the teachers have, and I have a lot of respect for teachers. They don't have time to go out there and learn like loads of different new things, etc. They've got obviously people to teach, so that's the reason why. It's a shame, but it was from a selfish point of view, it got me on the map to then start my career in more to the training.
Yeah, it's a great story. I love the, I love kind of mazy career stories. They're great. Let's talk about today's landscape, because we are in what seems to me to be something of a wild west in, you know, we're in a revolution. Would you agree with that, with AI?
Yeah, I think with AI, so because I've been involved in digital for like full time since 2001, I've seen the birth of pretty much most things now. I've seen the birth of search, or Google search as we know it. So, because at the time, what was popular was Alta Vista and Ask Jeeves. They were kind of like the main search engines. I've seen the birth of AdWords, like pretty much as the revolution of targeted ads that way. Because again, it was more of the CPU units at the time. So it's like the mid-page units and things like that, and banners. I've seen the birth of mobile. I've seen the birth of social media. I've seen the birth of influencer marketing. So I've seen pretty much the beginnings of most things. And I've never seen anything as impactful as generative AI in such a short space of time. Not even close. Mobile probably was the closest one, but I've never seen anything as powerful as this. So for me, when it comes to my training, because I train digital marketing and I have certain areas of expertise, but I have a way of teaching. I'm looking at fundamental things. So when it comes to people say, when I teach AI, really I'm using more generative AI from a how to use it to communicate and market. And that could be from creative content to how you communicate, engage, convert people. So that's kind of like the area of AI that I personally focus in. But when you start looking at the whole area of AI as well, it's the biggest thing since the internet. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, good. That's a good way to put it. Because I remember getting a call about 2 years ago, maybe not even that long ago, from a friend of mine who's a bit of a tech head. And I remember him saying he was quite concerned, you know, for me. And this, I think this was right after Midjourney had come on the scene. Maybe it was DALL-E. I think it was Midjourney. And he was worried about my business. And that, you know, me being, as I tend to be, a little bit behind the curve, to say the least, with tech, what do you mean? What are you talking about? So when I went and looked it up, it was like, oh, okay, right.
This
is interesting. And as you said, to your point, this is, we're all scrambling to a degree to try to understand where this might fit within our practice. Is it going to wipe out a lot of creatives? There's going to be a huge, however you look at it, there's going to be a huge upheaval. One of the first things I did was went back and I did a podcast episode called the AI Artist Audit. And I went through my entire practice quite brutally and looked at it through the lens of budgets are tight. Here's this thing. It's immediate. It's relatively cheap. What can be replicated in my practice and what has human value that I think is the thing to focus on to take forward. So it was just an interesting kind of, let's look in the mirror here now and re-assimilate somewhat. But I think we're still very much finding our feet and people are equal parts panicked, excited. There's all the emotions flying around at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think that with what you'll find is, initially, I think you'd think, okay, it's going to take my job. But what I've also noticed is that the best people who use Midjourney are art directors. Because ultimately, when it comes to Gen AI, it's to do with the prompt. What do you type in? If it was, for example, if I was using the likes of ChatGPT to diagnose or to get fit, there's a difference between my prompt and a physical personal trainer, because they will say, all right, well, I want this type of food program. I can only have this much protein a day. This is these joints are hurting me. And like, they go into detail. Well, I'll just like, look, I've got a 2-year-old, so I'm busy. Can I come up with a training program? That would be like how depth my prompt would be. And it's the same as art. Like I might say a picture of a dog on a skateboard going down the beach. You know, but you would go into this type of camera lens, this type of shot. If I'm going to eventually turn it into a moving image, I want this type of shot because I know this looks better. I want this type of shadow. I want, like, you can go into the detail to make a better picture. And some of the people that I know that's got the best prompts, pretty much they're all art directors or they all work for some creative thing. So what's happening is where before, for them to do 100, like, campaigns, it might take X amount of years. Now they can do it in a couple of weeks. That's essentially what's happened now. But ultimately, Gen AI just goes down to your prompt and your imagination. You know, what do you actually, are you going to think of putting there?
Yeah, and I think that also on the end, you know, on the end result of all that, there's the still, as far as I'm aware, nobody owns the copyright to the generated imagery, but because it's amalgamated from so many different sources, which, it's, you know, and to that point, it seems that it is being integrated into the workflow. So it's things like storyboarding and concepts. And one interesting use that I heard last week actually was that when there was a agency owner who said that it's helping them get illustrators into jobs because whereas before the end client might have been a little nervous about illustration over photography because there's more uncertainty there. Actually now they can use the person's style to work up a sample in situ in context for that job.
Yeah.
Just to give that bit more trust. And he said he's noticed it get more jobs over the line because the end client goes, oh, okay, see what you mean.
That's exactly what
it's going to look like. So it removes some uncertainty. So actually, it seems like there are some, when you stop to look at it and understand it, there are benefits too, which, like every new advent of tech, there's always going to be that evening out.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an important way to look at it. Is AI going to replace jobs? Yes. You know, there's no getting around that, but social media replaced jobs, you know, so it's not mobiles replaced jobs. Like, technology replaces jobs. That's kind of one of the main functions of technology. But if you can utilize this, and it's still really early days, anyone listening, it's still really early days. If you can utilize it and get it to work for you, then eventually you can become indispensable because yes, there are loads of jobs that's going to go, but there's also going to be huge opportunities as well. So that's kind of like how I've seen Gen AI, because I've seen it happen across pretty much so many other things in digital. You know, I know this story. I see how it plays out. And I don't think it will change that much because of Gen AI. It'd just be probably faster and more people using it.
Yeah, and you always get the initial frenzy as well, don't you? Where everyone's freaked, everybody's really pumped.
Yeah, yeah.
And ultimately, at some point there's a leveling out where it just becomes integrated and less spoken about, but just integral.
Exactly. And you're going to assume that everyone's going to be using it after a while. You know, it might not be necessarily. There's still a lot of. If I create, so at the moment, the video generators are quite popular. So Runway ML, Sora, when it eventually comes out, there's one, Dreammaker by Luma. So there's a few of them that's getting to a really good level, but there's still a lot of post-production you have to do. There's still a lot of, you're not going to just type in a prompt and get the perfect video. You're going to type in a prompt and you get 60%, and then you type in another prompt and you might get 10%, and you type in another prompt, you get 80%. So you're constantly doing prompts. You know, I was with my friend and he says for every good video, you get 10 that were just terrible. You know, so that's the same. For every selfie you see, there's 1500 that didn't make it. And it's the same here. But then you then have to put it into Adobe Premiere, or if it's images, Photoshop, to kind of just tweak it. Then the question then goes down to, and this goes back to copyright, what you was talking about before, who owns it. Where's the line between AI and someone created it? Because if, for example, it was you created something and you just used AI to just kind of just tweak a certain bit, is it AI generated? Or if it's AI generated and then you actually put it in post-production and you do a lot of changes, is it AI? You can say it was AI generated, but actually it was just generated by that, but the actual end product was not really. So that's where there's going to be a line. Where does it sit? And that line's important, especially if you're going to use social media, because social media is now telling people this is AI generated. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be so much gray area in this space. It's like they're still trying to deal with trademarks and copyrights from when I was at MySpace, you know, and I left MySpace 2009. So I don't know how they're going to deal with this quickly. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, it feels like a good time to talk about the fundamentals of all this stuff, of, you know, with particular reference to kind of digital marketing and specifically online, because, you know, we're at an interesting stage. I think what I pick up on, particularly in my industry, and I speak as somebody who works with a lot of designers, art directors, photographers, filmmakers, artists, visual communicators, essentially, and writers, I feel there's a saturation point to a degree happening. I think that people are feeling conflicted about social media. There's a lot of kind of, I'd rather not do it, / I really want to trim it back and find some focus within it, because there's all these platforms and I have to chase these algorithms to make it like me and all that kind of feeling.
Yeah.
But would I be right in saying that truly the fundamentals of what makes for effective marketing hasn't changed?
No, the fundamentals hasn't changed. You know, when it comes to, and this is something that I always teach, I always focus on the fundamentals, because people's behavior changes, technology changes, you know, fundamentals don't change, they don't really change. These are the things to master. Regardless, however you use, if you're a content creator in this digital world, it's not just the case of creating content. You know, yes, you have to create content. And there is that saying, content is king. Content is king if people see it. If they don't see it, is it king? So then the next thing is, well, how are we going to promote that content to get to the relevant people? And that's the problem with that. That's when you start chasing the algorithm. But that's only one way, like, people can see your content. And then, because I'll say ego, but I don't mean it in a negative way. But when people post, you want feedback, you know? So because of that, you want the likes, you want some comments, you want some shares. Otherwise, you wouldn't really post. And then it's a case of measuring. So actually, when it comes to the fundamentals now, it's creating content, it's promoting that content, it's getting that engagement, especially if you're going to use social media. And then it's measuring if it worked or converting people to a bigger project, whatever it may be. So I think, like, these are core fundamental things. You know, building a community is another fundamental thing. But as I said, technology will change. You know, I've seen people do this on MySpace, to Facebook, to YouTube, to Twitter, to stumble upon, to Reddit, to like, there was one called Chat Roulette, to Dig, to Twitter, sorry, not Twitter, to Instagram, to TikTok. Like, platforms change, you know, and people's behavior change. We went from long videos went from 10-minute videos, because that was the maximum on YouTube, to long format. Google saying, we really like long formats, to all of a sudden 6-second Vine videos, to now about a minute short videos. You know, people's behavior changes, but people still want content. They still want to see that content. They still want to engage with that content. And ultimately, if you're a content creator, you want them to act. That doesn't change. These are core fundamental things.
And and some of those immovables, I would say, are authenticity, story.
Yeah, story is so important. There's actually three. There's three types of story that's being told. There's who you are. So, for example, when I just broke down my history, there's that story. There's the content story. So, this podcast, the beginning, the middle, and the end. And then there's the user journey story, and that is taking them from, I'm just chilling at home, like just watching random stuff on TikTok, to I've now bought your product. And every single step, there's a story there as well. So there's actually three types of stories that's kind of being told simultaneously online to different audiences as well at the same time. So that's what makes it slightly more complicated as well. But ultimately, from the context that you were talking about, you still need a good story. You know, you still need a story to get people's attention, to get them interested, etc., to get them to like you, to know you, to trust you, and all of those things.
That's right. And do you think it's those things that help, that are kind of essential for getting around the algorithmic trappings, for want of a better term?
Not really, because the problem that you'll find with algorithms is most people will say, I've got a good story, I've got good content, and my content tells that it ticks all of the boxes, but they'll still get 3-4 views. So it can't necessarily be that. The algorithms, they look, because the algorithms can't tell what is good content, because that's an opinion, it's subjective. So it looks at certain elements. So for example, one of them, it will look at the people engage with this content. And then depending on the platform, different engagements mean more, like more weight. So for example, on TikTok, on Twitter, and I'm going to call it Twitter. There's no X for me, it's Twitter. So on Twitter, a like is worth more than a retweet that came out recently. On, for example, Facebook, a reaction is worth more than a like. On LinkedIn, from what I've seen, and that's the one I use the most, like, comment, and reactions are worth more than a repost. So that's one thing, the engagement affinity. Another thing is the type of content you post. So depending on the platform, you see on Instagram, it's a typical example. Some people have a static image, but they have it in a video, because they know that videos will get more of a reach. So when you see that, they're playing the algorithm game. You know, the time when you post, because what you'll find on social media, you can tell within the first 90 minutes if this post is going to do well or not, based on the ratio from likes to minutes. Okay, so in the first minute, I got 5 likes. In the second minute, I got 10 likes. In the third minute, I've got, and you can pretty much tell if something's going to do very well. Like, so yesterday, I've got a post. I posted on LinkedIn, and I knew within half an hour that this post is going to get a lot. So I'll check it right now as we speak, because it's still getting engagement. So this post has, it was a football one. It's football related. So it was, I don't know if you've seen Ivan Toney when, so we're saying this before England played the second, sorry, played the semi-finals. So this is just after England played Denmark. So it had the penalties. Ivan Toney took a no-look penalty, and then England
I put saw out this.
Have you seen
it's
of it yet?
It's fantastic.
So, yeah. So they put that out. So I posted that, and at the moment it has, impressions-wise, 620,000 impressions from not even 24 hours since I posted it. So now, what did I say? 624,000. I can't remember if I said 624,000. So 624,000 has 5,000 likes, 128 reposts, 131 comments. I knew within the first, when I got back after 40 minutes and checked, it had 200 likes. So I knew that this video is going to do 3,000 plus. But you, this is from experience. You kind of know because of the way the algorithm works. As a content creator, it can be a bit disheartening chasing the algorithm. But right now, I don't know any other way to make it fair. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the TikTok model, the TikTok model was slightly different. So the TikTok model, you can be a no one and get famous, or you can get a lot of views because of the way it works based on what you like. The Instagram model, Facebook, or the traditional way is based on the amount of followers you have and you built a community. Now, if I'm just starting, TikTok sounds a lot more like better for me. But if I've spent years building a community and now you're saying that I've got 100,000 in the community, but you're only going to send it to 1% of that community, I'll be a bit annoyed. So there's, it doesn't, it depends where you are. So yeah, it really depends where you are when it comes to this. But what I will say is algorithm is just one way that people can find you. The other way is that they know who you are. So that's another way. You can pay and do advertising. So that's another way. You can search. So make sure it's optimized for the search engines. Or there's something about that video that someone could take it and share it with their friends. So there's kind of like, there's five ways that people can find your content there, an algorithm being another.
And I think it's always really important to remember that we never owned these platforms. They were always there for free. So to a degree, we're always at the mercy of change or, you know, us just not being treated as the be-all end-all. So that's why I think it's still important to create newsletters, to build those communities that you speak of in more ways than just there directly on the platform. I guess you have to follow it up. I'm trying to get back to that a bit more myself now. I'm trying to start fresh. I'm trying to create solid foundations again. And I came across a brilliant book recently. I had worked as part of an event with an author called Kyle Chaker, who he's the staff writer of The New Yorker. And he's brought out a brilliant book called Filter World, How Algorithms Flattened Culture. Okay, and very much looking at the homogenization effect of all of that. And one of the things he mentions about kind of pulling away from that is, you know, he's particularly enjoying quirky newsletter guests, email newsletters again at the moment, and finding more niche stuff where there's a degree of human curation. And I found that a really interesting aspect of this.
Yeah, I think that the Beehive is grew quite quickly because of it being a good newsletter and that human creation side of things rather than algorithms. I'm a fan of a mixture of both. You know, sometimes I like the human creation side of things, but then there's always going to be the bias of, oh, why didn't you include this or why didn't you include that? But then again, if it's somebody who you really respect, then you kind of just go with what they say. So that whole curation side of things, I'm a big fan of. The challenge with the human creation side of things is when they become very popular. If they become very popular, then their content is going to be, they become an influencer. And then once they become an influencer, people are paying them to put certain things in. Then it's like, and that essentially is the life cycle of a lot of influencers. They do it authentically and they do it for the passion. And then people are realizing that they're building up a following. And then someone will say, well, can I pay for this? And then they'll go through that dilemma. Like that kind of, well, is it still authentic if someone's paying me? And then they will go with the money and then it can dilute that way. So I'm a big fan of the human side of things. Algorithms is good because I do find content that I would never have found before. You know, that's some of the reasons why I like the algorithms. But I think having a good balance of both works really well.
I think so. And I think another thing in all of this is to understand before you even go onto the platforms is if you're using this professionally for business, you know, what are your business objectives? What do you want from this? Why are you coming on here? I guess when you know that, then it gives you some autonomy over how much of a balance you look for in terms of human curation and the algorithm and how much, you know, then that can help you answer the question of, you know, what worth is chasing the algorithm? Because actually there's a way to work anything. It could be a car, it could be a mobile phone. There's a user manual for everything. And in some senses, it's kind of a user manual. And I guess the question of worth of the algorithm, whether it's a waste of time or whether it's a valid use of your time, is really going to come down to what you want to get out of it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that, as I said, the algorithm game is, it can be very, the problem with the algorithm game, the main problem is that it makes creators create content based on algorithms rather than what they think is good content. Because they might turn around and say, well, the algorithm is favoring this type of content, so I have to create this type of content. So you start losing that creative side of things. Now, that's not everyone. A lot of people are like, I don't care, I'm just creating it. And they can still become popular that way. Building an email list is important, as you said. But again, email is still, like, open rates, is it might not be as great. You're going to have problems with email. You know, you're going to have different types of problem with email. Then you've got, for example, at the moment, I've got a WhatsApp group, which is great, but then it's a case of trying to manage how often do you post. So, for example, I post AI marketing and content creation news on my WhatsApp group, but I'm trying to find a balance of, right, do I post 2 or 3 times a day? Do I post 20 times a day? Because that's the amount of news I get. What news do I? So it still has that human side of things. So, but then it's a time thing as well. So then it's like, okay, well, I'm busy. I've got this and this and this to do. Oh, I still need to post this. And there's that human side of things, because time, once you start bringing in curation, if I was the creator, it's time plays into it. Where if it was just algorithms and I could automate it, that would actually be easier, but it might not necessarily be true to what I want to get out there. So that's kind of like the other thing that you're constantly looking at. But as I said, I can't think of another way at the moment to make it fairer. Now, some people listening to this might, but I can't think of another way, like a way beside, because obviously the human aspect is great, but again, that can easily be changed. And I know that because when I was at MySpace at that time, if you wanted to get on the homepage of MySpace, homepage of YouTube, homepage of Bebo, it was all humans that were curating it, which means people realized who you were. And I was one of them that could have that type of power. So I was inundated with people. Can you do this? Can you do that? I work for this label. Can you work for that? Or can we do a deal? So if I give you this and this, and we get this type of exposure. So, and then, yeah, it just becomes a nightmare when it's the human side of things, especially when you get to that, like, really popular level. So it needs a mixture of both.
God, yeah, there's some keys to hold.
Yeah. Oh, God, tell me about it.
And I think another thing is the sheer speed that all of this moves at is, I guess I land on the side of, I take some comfort from that, because there's no point me sitting there trying to be completely constant all the time when, as you mentioned there, I'm a dad, got a business to run, podcast to produce, a life to lead for leisure, you know, so... There's only so much time I can give to that. And I'm guilty of not giving it, you know, enough attention. Like, I can be naive sometimes with taking what might only be 10, 15 minutes to read about algorithms and the like. So I can be a bit stubborn in that way and go.
There's a guy, Brian Dean. He ran a site called Backlinko. He sold it. But how he grew was really interesting. And I really like his idea, because everyone was saying, create more content. And he actually done the opposite. He would be sporadic on his content. He would create content, but it would be really good. But he mastered promotion. And that's how he became big. And I've always been a fan of that, because the biggest change that happened from when I went to working at the BBC to MySpace was when I was at the BBC, I could create a radio show and put it out on One Extra and it would get thousands of listeners. I could create a show, put it out on Radio 1 or Radio 2, whatever, and you get hundreds of thousands of listeners. I can then take the same show, so the content exactly the same, put it on my MySpace profile and get 4 views, even though MySpace was 10 times the size of Radio 1 or One Extra. So I realized then, 15 years ago, it's not about content per se. Content is king if people see it, as I said earlier. It really is about promotion. And that means part of it is the algorithm game, but part of it as well is building a community and however you get your content out to your community as well. So there's that. The other thing about the algorithm game is what platforms ultimately like to see is a busy profile. So it doesn't necessarily mean you posting content all of the time. It could also mean you just engaging and liking and commenting and reacting to others. Because the platform sees a busy profile, and that can help you when you do post your own stuff. So they reward you. So sometimes, rather than try and post every day, I I have this formula, or not a formula, like this kind of, I try and stick to this principle. For every time I post, I will do 10 reactions. And reactions could be likes, comments, like not necessarily reposts, but likes, comments, reactions on LinkedIn I use. So, and then sometimes on days where I know that I'm, like, for example, today, I'm not going to post because yesterday's post done so well. So I still want it to kind of, it's about 48 hours. You kind of let it go if it does really well. What I'll do is I will start liking and engaging or commenting, etc., on other people's posts today rather than post. So it still sees me active on today's date. So that's the other thing that you can do as well. It's not necessarily about creating stuff. You can just be active and that helps.
That's interesting because I find it a useful exercise to remember the word social in this and how powerful that is. Yeah. And think of it, you know, walking into a pub or into your mate's house where let's just say there's a gathering around a video game, everyone's playing FIFA. You don't just walk in there and shout a sentence and walk out because essentially that's what I have been guilty in the past of doing is just using it as a portfolio and then wondering why. So that's really interesting because it is about back and forth and there is as much currency because you're essentially listening.
Yeah, I do a lot of talks all over the world why MySpace failed. And here's one of the reasons what hurt MySpace a lot. MySpace was a B2C organization at first. So 1% of the people were content creators, 99% of the people were listening to the music, commenting, engaging, etc. When Facebook started coming along, people went over to Facebook for all of that, and then they were just on MySpace just to listen, but they didn't engage. So what ended up happening was the artists and the people in the creative community were only speaking to other creatives. So essentially it became a B2B platform where all the customers were somewhere else. And this is what happened, this is what's happening, and I've been calling this for a while, on Twitter. Twitter, you don't engage as much. People go on other platforms to engage. Twitter's now is just people just posting, broadcasting. And when they get the engagement, a lot of the time it's just with other people similar to them, but not necessarily customers, if that makes sense, or not what it was like a few years ago. So this is really like, I noticed that quite early. So the engagement, because this is what everyone wants, but this also gives you an opportunity. So for example, because people are not used to hearing from fans on Twitter, is a good opportunity now to start contacting people as a fan, because then you'll get on their radar a lot more, because unless you're trying to contact The Rock or like Kim Kardashian or someone like that who's got millions, that's not obviously not going to be worth it, but it really helps. And as I said, you can really grow on social this way, or at least be very active on social this way.
That's a good point. I have noticed that with Twitter. I loved it as a little community in my earliest years, maybe 2009 through to, I don't know, 2012, 13, maybe even a bit later than that. But yeah, recent times I am struggling in that regard. You know, I'm posting what I think is valuable conversation starters, threads about creativity and inviting discussion. And there's tumbleweed a lot of the time. Yeah. It never used to be like that. Yeah. So it's quite a kind of interesting.
It's definitely changed the platform. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, but that's really, I think that's really healthy actually, because you know what you're saying there about also looking at the way that you're engaging and behaving and to a degree listening to others and interacting is good, because that for me removes a little bit of the rewarding of conformity, which I think is what algorithms can do in terms of our creativity. But actually, no, you could be creating the most radical, interesting work out there. But as long as you're actually willing to look at the way you're behaving on a platform to increase that engagement, then sharing the work and what you're creating only becomes a part of that, which should give us some artistic license.
Yeah, everyone wants to do the quick, let's just post and then everyone will kind of follow it. Like that, I call that the publish and pray approach. You know, you publish it and then you pray the internet God send it viral, and that's just not going to work. So again, you do have to put a bit of hard work in. You do, not even hard work, you have to put a bit of work in. What I do, because I said to you earlier on that I suffer from repetitive strain injury, so I have problems with the nerves in my fingers, so I can't type. I can type, but I'm in pain. So what I tend to do is, and I've been doing this since 2008, and I know a lot of people talk about this strategy now, but I've been doing this for a while. And that is, I do it over coffee. So what I will do is I'll have a coffee. So I might have a coffee in the morning, and that's when I engage with people. And then I'll go away, and then I might have a coffee round about this time, about say midday or whatever. And then I'll have a coffee, and then I'll engage then. And then I'll end up engaging with people I engaged with the first time because I'm usually responding back to them. And then I might have another coffee just around about 4 or 5 o'clock, and I'll engage again. So I'll do it over coffee. So that's kind of like my time. So, it doesn't even have to be coffee, but over when I'm doing something which is going to be a short space of time, rather than me just sitting down, just aimlessly going through the internet or just listening to, I don't know, some YouTube video or playing Candy Crush on my phone, like I try and say, like, let me just do this now and try and hit at least 10 people.
Yeah. And all of these platforms, as we know, are designed to keep us there, to hook our attention. So I think that it's a really healthy exercise to bring some a system to that and a pattern because, you know, and I said this to a friend recently because he'd fallen foul of a quiet spell. And when I'd gone through the same thing, truth be told, last couple of years have been very up and down. But during those quiet spells, what I had to remind myself was to start small again. And this was a case of I'd neglected emailing my regular clients or any new clients for a number of years during early parenthood, which just absolutely understandable, justifiable, not kind of not regretting that. But it was a case of then not feeling defeated that I hadn't done that, so I'm going to carry on not doing that. It was like, okay, let's look at, as you said, the morning coffee is always a good one. Morning coffee. Let's say five interactions on social media, or add 5 new people on LinkedIn and start a relationship, and then 5 emails to trusted and tried clients. And at least then, when you start to add that up over the course of, let's say, a month, you're in the game. There's a chance that you might pick something up. You're encouraging fortune to favor you, as opposed to that, the kind of, well, I haven't done anything for ages and I feel bad about that, and now I'm going to moan. It's like, just little nibbles along the way and actually finding some structure in your schedule to do it. And I think that when you find that consistency, then surely you're raising the likelihood of that algorithm failing you in a very wholesome way.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I'm a big fan of sports. And when it comes to sports, if things are going tough, what they always say is, like, just go back to fundamentals. You know, if it's football, just go back to the fundamental formation. If it's boxing, just go back to your fundamentals. When you're the key of, say, for example, if you're doing boxing or MMA, is the important thing is your initial stance. You know, if you can get people out of that initial stance, then that's where they can attack you, etc. It's the same when it comes to business. It's like, if you're kind of all over the place or you get busy or whatever, sometimes it's good to go, what are the fundamental things? Right, I've already worked with these clients. Let me email them. I would say every time I've gone back to doing that, I've always got an extra client. Like, in fact, today I had a meeting with someone an hour before you, who's a client I've worked with twice in the past, and I just contacted them. And then I put something on LinkedIn and they contacted me. And then we had the conversation and they were like, would you be interested in doing some more training in October? And I'm like, yeah. And that just led to work, going back to fundamental things. So I'm a massive fan of fundamentals because, as I said, in sport, there's a reason why they teach you this first. And then if things get tough or things get busy, go back to this. You know, there's no go back to fancy things because they're the icing on the cake. You know, working the algorithm or doing all these fancy things with the algorithm, that's more of the icing on the cake. But make sure you've got foundations in place. Because the other thing as well is that, especially if you're doing it professionally, if you work the algorithms and go viral, but you've not got fundamental things in place, you're going to miss the wave. All that will happen is your post went viral. Great. After 24 hours, 48 hours, it's gone. And now you're like, hey, I'm back. Let me try and capitalize on it. But it's too late. Something else has gone viral now. And you didn't capitalize on it. So this is why I would say the reality is, from my experience working in social media from the beginning, all you need are fundamentals. Like that's literally it. Because social media is simple. It's not easy, but it is simple. And this is why we got 15-year-old millionaires. They've not even finished high school yet and they're making millions from this. You know, so we're not creating the algorithm for ChatGPT. You know, we're not engineers for Amazon. All we're doing is creating content, getting it to the relevant people, getting them to engage and then converting them. That's it. That pretty much is the game.
Yeah. And speaking of the teenagers, I saw a great tip the other day, and it was a friend of mine who's a creative coach. And he said to message like a millennial. And I read further on the post, and his point was, and I'm really guilty of this, you know, I would add someone on LinkedIn. I think there's a good match there. I'm an illustrator, they're an art director, or they're a potential podcast listener. And what I would do is go in with, hi, how are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. It's like, you know, I didn't even realize I was losing them in these far too long. He was like, message like a millennial. treat it like it's an old MSN messenger and it's a conversation. Hi, yeah. How are you doing? Good to connect.
Yeah.
Leave it there. Open, end it with a question. And then once you start that conversation, you've got a little bit of rapport and you've got a bit of a dialogue and you sort of go slow and it doesn't feel overwhelming and intimidating. So the I key there, really interesting.
Yeah, I think the key there is, as you said, rapport. Because even now, if you start, if I just open up my LinkedIn, you see the amount of spam I get. And it's a mixture of the first one that you said, how it's like, hi, I'm this. And the thing is, you know, if when they connect you, that they're going to hit you with a, because it's automated, they're going to hit you with a message immediately. Then even if someone says, hi, how are you? In my mind, I'm thinking they're going to contact me because why are they asking that? What I find is one of the best things is see what that person has posted or see what something and then try and make something relevant to them. So right now, for example, the football's going on. Someone who, let's say, for example, who is Spanish and you want to work with, you can contact them and say, I really hope Spain wins. I hope Spain, let's imagine England get through. I hope Spain beats England in the final, LOL, or something like that. And then to start those conversations or they'll remember you. You know, like how we started this conversation is like, oh, I heard that you've got a son. Yeah, because I'm going to talk about that. I'm not going to be like, yeah. You know, I'm going to say, yeah, thank you. It's like, yeah, it's being a dad is great. Like, it's that. And that's key. Fundamental things.
Yeah, you know, common ground.
Same thing, yeah, same thing. Online essentially is just a mirror offline. You know, it's the same. Like, if you have a conversation offline, listen, interpret, respond. So what did you say? What does that mean to me? What shall I say? It's the same thing on the internet. Okay, listen, what does this mean to me? How shall I respond? Most people just want to respond. You know, like they could listen, get everything out. And if someone done that in real life, you wouldn't work with them. You wouldn't be, you'll think, ignore them. Or if you are friends with them, you're like, oh God, it's this person again. They're going to talk for ages. You know, it's that. And you don't want to be that person.
And like you said, with the Ivan Tony thing, it's got humor. It's, you know, it's topical, it's current. I saw another one this morning where, you know, Harry Kane had posted himself in the stadium saying, you know, let's get ready. And then somebody just replied saying, it's tomorrow, mate. And it's gone completely viral. And it's so simple, so succinct, just everyone gets it. Everyone's on board. It's going on. It's what binds us. And that's what it, you know, and that takes us right back to it. Social media, you know,
And social media goes into what I said right at the beginning, where I said about behavior and technology. You know, they're the two things that change, you know, people's behavior change, technology, because behavior is another way of saying social, technology is another way of saying media. So it really is. And they go hand in hand. It's just that so many people on social media think media, you know, they forget the human psychology of what makes people use it, what makes people tick. And that's the, going back to what you said, stories, you know, that's why for me, I'm a big fan of stories and all three different types of stories, how you tell your story, how it can make people be interested, but also from a professional point of view, get them to act as well. So these are the key things. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I mean, that just about covers everything I wanted to cover, but I'd love to just give you a chance to tell us about your podcast, because I discovered it this morning and I absolutely love it. And I would love to recommend it to my listenership, because I think it's going to help us creative types who are freaking out about AI or not. Or loving AI. Either way, I think it's valuable content. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, thank you for that, Ben. So what I did, so when I got into social media, so I got into training in social media 2009, and I actually got in a bit too early. And what I mean by that is some of the things that I was doing, like I've got YouTube videos of me doing some of these talking head videos, split or jump cuts, etc. from 2009 on YouTube. They're like 16 years old, 15 years old, some of them. And then I wanted to do a podcast and I said, but I don't want to do a podcast because it's like 2-3 hours. I just want to do a short podcast. And then got busy training, never got round to it. And by then, so many people had done podcasts and social media. So when AI started coming out, and I've been teaching AI for about 2 years now, originally, when I started talking about it, it scared people. So I kind of stopped for a bit, and then I kind of gently started bringing it into my marketing trainings or my social media training sessions. Now I've got full sessions on it. So because of that, what happened was I said, right, the idea still stayed the same. I wanted to do a podcast in short bite-sized chunks on a subject, but I wanted to make it relevant to pop culture. So when Gen AI started coming out, I started thinking, all right, this is what I'm going to do. So what I've got is a podcast It's only 10 minutes a day. And if you listen to stuff twice the speed, it's 5 minutes, which is, I listen to everything twice the speed. And it's about generative AI. So more to do with the stuff that you can generate. And it's aimed at the content creator, marketer, or the everyday person. So I'll talk about AI in entertainment or AI in, like I do marketing examples or AI quotes. And it's myself and a guy called Chris Branch, who's really popular on LinkedIn. And it's 10 minutes and we just talk about every day is a new subject. Because it's only 10 minutes, we can only focus on one subject. So every day is a new subject. So the podcast is called In a Nutshell, because it's obviously short, and In AI Nutshell. So there's a little pun on the words there. So if you want to find out more about it, you can go to soinainutshell.com. And that's where you can see the podcasts. But also I've got an email list, which we just kind of email every Friday, a WhatsApp group, which is just AI marketing news, AI tools, because there's thousands of tools. So these are just ones that we recommend, and AI case studies. So this is examples of people or brands who's used AI and got results, good or bad. So that's kind of like the podcast, email, WhatsApp, tools, and examples. They're kind of the foundations of In a Nutshell podcast.
Well, you guys, a big recommend from me. Like I said earlier to you, you know, don't consider myself particularly techie. I feel relatively disconnected from AI. I need to start dipping my toe. However, I loved it. Found it really interesting. And it's got a lot of transcendental themes in there. So yeah, big recommend. Well, this has been a joy anyway, Andrew. And
likewise.
Yeah, keep on your great work. And I'm sure this is going to be a great value to people. And it's been lovely to chat.
Brilliant. Thank you. And also, this is 8 years in the making, by the way, everyone.
Yeah, so a little bit of context. Andrew and I had a chat in London when we both lived there, 8 years ago, to my shame. And it's I think it's one of only two episodes that I've somehow failed to put out there. And the first one, there was a great reason, because the, you know, a lot of goalposts move, but not in your case. I don't really have a reason. I could pull a few excuses out the hat, but it somehow just slipped through the cracks. However, what we've chatted about today is fantastic. So I'm a big believer that these things come to pass in the right time. So that's what
Brilliant.
I'll say.
Brilliant. No, I'm glad you invited me back.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and thanks again, mate.
Thank you.
Huge thank you to Andrew for taking the time to talk 8 years after we did this conversation and I never released it. But it's safe to say, rest assured, this was a million times better. We've both evolved in what we do, our understanding of our trades, and I really loved that conversation. I learned a lot. There's going to be some serious notes for my own practice, because I need to get my act together and work out exactly what I want to do with my social media channels. Where is the time best spent, and where can I strip it back from to get back to the actual creating of my work, not for the algorithm, but for the sheer love of it and putting it out there. So thank you for listening today, guys. Thank you also to my chief sponsor of the show, founding sponsor, IllustrationX.com, wonderful illustration and animation agency, doing so much good work for the industry and representing a hell of a lot of talented artists. Check them out. Ukrainian Institute, ui.org.ua. If you've got a way of supporting the Ukrainian creative community, it might be a commission, it might be a retweet, it might be just a little nod to what they're doing in this horrific time of war, ui.org.ua. What's going on for you guys? Keep in touch. I love the dialogue. Hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm on there forever these days. I'm on Instagram also. That's about it from me. We've got episodes coming up with Yasmin Ali, who's a chemical engineer working in renewable energy. We're talking about the global energy system, the creativity within that work, what's required to shift to clean energy at this dire time of need as far as a climate crisis goes, something a little different. You know that I like that. Professor Carl Chin coming up, a historian specializing in the English working class. We're talking about what it means to be working class, where it fits in today's world, and what's going on with the issue in the arts with opportunities for working class people. Very much close to my heart as a working class lad. So watch that, this space, for that one. Loads coming up. Hit me up if you want to come on the show. I've had experiences where, you know, I've been promoting my own book, so I've been getting on a load of podcasts. You can see me on Matt Essam's show, Creative Courage. I've been on loads of them recently, and I love doing it. I love talking on this show. I love doing away fixtures on other people's podcasts. But I've had some people get back and kind of, in not so many words, sort of tell me to scatter because I've approached them and they won't have that. quite interesting. I'm wide open to approaches. Helps me to get really interesting people on the show that I might not have considered. So if you've got a press release, if you've got a project, if you've got a reason to come on the show, an interesting aspect of creativity to cover, then let me know. I'm well up for it. Seems that not everyone else is. But there you go. You know, want to make an omelette, you've got to break some eggs and all that. Anyway, guys, let me know your feedback on this one. If it's going to affect how you use and view your social media, I'm very interested for feedback on that one. Let's get some discourse going. Have a lovely week. Stay creative. Cheers, guys.